IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
Okay, maybe you have recently done job interviews you didn't think they went too well for you, or perhaps you've a job interview coming up, or I actually know some people who don't go for jobs because they fear the job interview process. Well, we'll be talking about that in the last hour of the show. So if you have any questions about that, let us know what's the right thing to talk about and all that kind of stuff. Hopefully I'll go through most of it for you. But if you have any questions specific to that, let us know. We're going to talk also a little bit later on about are we not very good at receiving compliments. So that's also coming up. Good morning, Greg. Just listening to your article about car insurance and modified cars. My son has his car modified. It passed the NTT last week with the modifications done on it. Did your guest say that if my son has a crash, his insurance will not cover him? Oh my God, I don't think parents realise that. Can anyone tell me what insurance companies cover modified cars, please? Now, a listener said that. The expert didn't say that. I'm not saying the listener is not an expert, but if your car passes the NCT and your insurance company is notified of the modifications, I don't see how that would how his insurance would be invalid. So if there's anything else to dig into that, I will certainly try and find it out, but please don't alarm yourself because the car's passed the NCT. And presumably the insurance company knows of the modifications. Just on a cursory search for insurance companies that cover modified cars, Chill Insurance has a whole section on it. Okay, Chill. They are a broker, Chill, aren't they? They're an online broker, though. I don't think they insure themselves. But anyway, there's a full section on it. Thank you very much for doing the research for us. That's rubbish, Greg. Fitting a tow bar does not modify your car, as most cars are made by the manufacturer to fit an appropriate tow bar. I'm only going by the fact that my insurance was modified because I got a tow bar fitted. So that was my own experience with one insurance company. So hopefully I didn't mislead anyone there. My apologies. Completely shocked. My son's car is modified. Does this mean he's not insured in the event of a collision? That comes in from Mary in Buncrana. Maybe that's something just we need to get some absolute clarity on. You need to notify your insurance company of modifications. That is a condition of the insurance being given to you. I transferred my no claims bonus 7 years ago from my car to a Volkswagen camper van. Now I went to revert back to the car. The insurance tell me my bonus is no good. I have to start over again. Quoted over €3,000 if I can't prove that I have my driving or any driving experience. Wow, okay. Didn't realize that you could get caught out quite easily, couldn't you? So the insurance was transferred from a car to a camper van. Went to revert back, and now effectively they've no driving experience in a car as far as the insurance company is concerned. Re-Gaza Israel conflict. You posed the question, how can one group of humans do this to other humans? Well, we're doing exactly the same thing here in Ireland by aborting thousands of helpless, innocent babies from their mother's wombs, believes this listener, all in the name of legal choice. Over 30,000 in the last few years. So Mother Teresa summed it up exactly with this sentence. There'll be no peace in the world as long as a mother can kill her own child in the womb. I utterly abhor the evil in Gaza, but we in Ireland cannot stop what's happening there, but we can stop the legal abortions. That is a matter of an opinion. Of course, there are a lot of people that don't believe that that's exactly what's happening, even though you firmly do, if you know what I mean. But anyway, that's your view. And it has been shared there. Letterkenny University needs a new hospital. Stop adding bits to a unit that's not fit for purpose. It needs a new state-of-the-art hospital, believes a listener. Staying with health, my own father died from cancer 20 years ago. He suffered greatly. He was in severe pain. He was on morphine for 3 months. You wouldn't let an animal go on like that. We shouldn't let people suffer. This is on the issue of assisted dying. There is a GP conference on it in Letterkenny. I think it's, well, I won't say when I think it is in case I mislead it. I'll try and find that out if anyone's interested. I don't think that with Ireland's disgraceful reputation for handling mental health, can they make an end of life decision for people with mental health issues? A few more on that, because it is a story that gets a lot of people talking. Right, actually, they're on a different issue, and I don't want to switch from one to the other. Greg, on the unification of Ireland question, I think the English government should be levied to cover the cost of embedding the six counties into the Republic of Ireland, since they were too weak to oppose the threat of violence and agreed to support the partition and a gerrymandered border to ensure a majority unionist vote. Indeed. I remember a few years ago, says this listener, you couldn't renew a provisional licence unless you showed that you sat and failed a driving test. This regulation was introduced because previously you could renew your provisional licence by showing evidence that you had applied for a test. People were applying for a test and then cancelling in order to renew their provisional licence. I thought, honestly, that that was still the case. Right. Okay. We're joined in studio by Liam Canning now, counsellor, psychotherapist at New Dawn Counselling. Liam, thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
So, New Dawn Counselling, talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, New Dawn Counselling is my own private practice, and I suppose I have been working as a psychotherapist for the last around 20 years in Letterkenny. So, started off very small, but it's quite a busy practice now, and I provide a lot of different support to clients, but also to therapists and therapists in training. So, yeah, that's it.
And we, I mean, not exclusively, but, you know, sometimes it does feel we are more disproportionately affected by traumatic incidences in this part of the world, and dealing with that and understanding it and recognising that.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think, I suppose as a psychotherapist, you're constantly working with trauma. I think it's a word that's used a lot and not fully understood. And that, you know, I suppose people, you know, think that, just say, for example, the events of Chrysler, that, you know, that was a traumatic event. Everybody would agree with that. And then, you know, as time goes on, people move on. And people kind of get back to normal life and work life. And, you know, now I suppose what people don't recognise is so much, because you can't actually see it, is that trauma is not the actual event. It's what happens within the brain and the body following the event. And that part of you is not moving on at the same level or the same pace.
Last, in discussing people's concerns that they have post the Chrysler tragedy last week, it's incredibly difficult from my perspective, but not in any way on the scale. That'll make sense as I go in here, in that, you know, obviously it's very important that people's voices are heard, that people have a platform that they can speak.
Yeah.
But it's very, very difficult because there are lots of different people with lots of different feelings. And one of the things I was particularly concerned of is that though for some people, because we all deal with things differently, but for some people that had made progress in, I don't know if it's living with or dealing with trauma, you can correct me on the terminology, is that in me doing that, they could have regressed. Okay, that it was triggering in some way or other.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of very difficult decisions one has to try and make before talking about things like this.
Yeah, completely. And again, this is the bit that's quite difficult for a lot of people to understand. And, you know, again, coming back to, you know, what trauma is, you know, it is the long-term effect that stays with the person. And that effect is impacted directly by the relationship. So say, for example, if we're looking at who was affected there, you've got parents, you've got siblings, families, you've got all the emergency services, guards, you know, doctors, ambulance people, fire brigade. So you have all those people, plus the people that were there on site. So ordinary people, maybe with no training or background in anything. And every one of those people are traumatised. And then take it out another bit. It's like, I suppose the easiest way to explain it is if you threw a stone into a pool and the ripple effect that has, so that those waves hit everybody in the community. Because you've got, just take one individual there, you know, and if you think about yourself here, you know, think about how many people are you connected with. And, you know, if on average, you'll have 100 plus people that are, so you take a family who has lost somebody, you're into thousands of people being impacted. Take the people, the emergency people who are there at the scene, and you're looking at all their families as well. So this again is like that ripple effect. It travels right throughout the whole community.
And we probably you know, quite rightly and innocently presume that someone who was present and witnessed the immediate impact of the explosion, but not maybe weren't bereaved,
yeah,
that they would feel trauma in the same more so than someone who watched from afar and watched the media coverage, but they could still be affected. You know, it just depends on the individual, doesn't it? So, in other words, you don't actually have to have been present and in the moment.
That's correct.
To suffer the trauma of an event of this scale.
Yeah, completely. Because if you just to give you another example of that, if you look at what happened just straight after Chrysler, I mean, look at people right around the world, you know, Australia, Canada, different countries that took to fundraising. So it tells you there that somewhere in that network, there were connected somehow, but they weren't present. They were thousands of miles away. So it does have that ripple effect or impact. People who were, I suppose, present on the site that weren't directly impacted will have completely different, I suppose, symptoms of trauma than somebody who's directly impacted. Because somebody who's directly impacted, like the families, will also have the grieving process. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other person, you know, will have a different level of trauma, a different degree of trauma. But again, it comes down to the person's personality as well.
Mm-hmm. So we're speaking about trauma generally as well. Mm. So the loss of a parent,
yes,
or a sibling, or a child for that matter, mm-hmm, individually, obviously this applies to those people as well, doesn't it?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Is everyone affected by trauma? Because you'll find sometimes that for different reasons, someone loses someone very close to them, but feels that they've processed it, you know what I mean? And they're okay and they've come to terms with it, they understand it. They realise that maybe the person had a full and happy life and that this is just part of living. And then you'll hear people say, well, it hasn't hit them yet.
Yeah, that's very true.
Does it always hit someone?
It does. It does. You know, it doesn't go away. So it's about the person's ability to cope. And I have seen families where, you know, somebody passes, and it could be somebody quite elderly. You can see, you know, in the lead up to the loss, that there's denial. You know, they're living in the denial. They're hoping that, you know, again, this person's becoming more and more ill, but they're hoping that this person's going to recover. So then, you know, within the family, some people in the same family may have processed the loss or started the grieving process before the person actually died at all.
And also it depends on your relationship. You could have a brother and sister.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm sorry if I'm conflating two things, and I hope it doesn't sound insensitive, but it's so that it broadens it out for everyone a little bit. And I do want to return to the specifics of a traumatic events like Chrysler, but it depends on, say, for instance, a parent, an elderly parent, the relationship to siblings had with that person, whether there's any regrets or whether they felt they were there long enough. I presume all of these things can lessen the impacts or worsen the impacts of trauma.
Yeah, well, I think you said it there, you know, yourself. You know, the most important factor in it is the relationship that you had with the individual that you're losing.
And can I say, just to be clear, because I want to be fully clear, I don't want to conflate grief and trauma, right? Are they two separate things? So, in other words, if I lost my father, what's the difference between the grief of losing him or the trauma of losing him? Just to make sure I don't accidentally...
Yeah, yeah, and I think they're confused quite often. Mm. You know, grieving, I suppose, is a natural process. Everybody will experience grief at some stage of life. Trauma is a sudden, unexpected event that, you know, I suppose, like, if you go back to the Chrysler tragedy, something, you know, normal life was going on that day, and then within a fraction of a second, you know, something tragic to that severity happens. Mm-hmm. And what makes trauma different is that, you know, if you can just picture that event, what happened that in that moment is that there's a sudden threat to your life. So there is, and those are the people who are most traumatized from it. So it's the ripple effect then that comes out of that. So that's very different to the grieving process.
Right, focus on trauma then for the rest of this, because I really don't want to confuse anyone on it. Are the symptoms of trauma?
Yes, there are. You know, the symptoms of trauma are, there's a multitude of them. There's, you know, firstly, intense intrusive thoughts. So when we talk about intense intrusive thoughts, it's like, it's the reliving, the reliving of that experience over and over again. I think it's important to acknowledge that what happens, you know, how does trauma affect the person? So it's important to acknowledge that, you know, our senses, like our vision, our hearing, you know, our sense of smell, taste and touch, they're our primary senses. They inform us of practically everything we do. So can you imagine now if you were standing just at the scene or walking into that service station at the moment that it exploded? So you can see how your senses go from normal function to very high function in a fraction of a millisecond. So what it's doing is it's recording, you know, what it sees, smells, hears, tastes and touch. And that's exactly what the issue is here, because that's what's recorded in your system, in your brain, in your nervous system. And so, for example, you're walking down Letterkenny Street 10 years later and somebody, say, for example, drops a dustbin lid. So a loud bang will automatically flood your body and bring you right back to that experience, and you have no control over that.
Does time, like, say, for instance, someone had an incredibly traumatic experience without talking through it with someone like yourself or being equipped to understand and maybe deal with it, does trauma ease with time, generally speaking?
Well, I think, you know, everything gets better with time.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, sometimes it depends on the personality of the person. People are very good at parking things and putting them away and not talking about them. Now, the reality is, does it go away? No, it doesn't. And so, you know, 10 years later, you know, you come across, just say, for example, a roadkill, a cat. And you could have this overwhelming response or reaction to it and not understand why. You're looking at it going, well, logically.
And is that a completely emotional response, or you could freeze presumably in your spot?
You could freeze. You can do any number of things. Freeze being the one I think that people most often recognise. But what happens is the system has to get rid of it. The brain and the system are fighting with each other. So while you manage to pack it away for most of the time, a sudden, again, incident like that can, you know, it pushes past all your defences and you can end up in you know, floods of tears and, you know, breaking down and not know why. Because you can't logically make sense of it.
But if you can understand it, presumably that it becomes an easier process, or one you can handle better, because you can make sense of why you've reacted like that.
Yeah, completely. And I think this is why, you know, this is why trauma or therapy is so important. You know, for people who were involved in any way in you know, any tragedy, but, you know, particular Chrysler, as we're talking about Chrysler, it's really important, even though you think you're doing okay, you know, that you might be doing okay for now, but it will catch with you at some point. And I think it's important. And people have, I suppose, over the years become, I suppose, more accepting of going to therapy. You know, it used to be seen as, you know, there was something wrong with you. But we're human beings. We're all the same. You know, for me, it's about giving something within yourself for your own well-being attention that needs to be processed, because we all need to process all the time. And we do, whether we go to therapy or not. But to talk it out with somebody, to go through it with somebody, to work with somebody is very important. And also, I suppose, the other part of trauma is, you know, re-traumatization.
Talk to me a bit more about that then.
Yeah, well, that's where, you know, we can very easily be re-traumatized by a past event. And that can happen to us in many, many different ways. And if I take this to the Chrysler piece here, because I think this is important. Chrysler happened, and if you can imagine, everybody at the time experienced, you know, similar trauma, but trauma from the same event. So here we are now, a year and a half, you know, heading on 2 years later. And, you know, people who were directly impacted, like families, are quite, most of them will still be at that very early stage of trauma. Whereas people who are more removed from it, even though they were traumatised, are now starting to move on.
So it might be the wider community?
Some, yes, in the wider...
Not specific, not...
Not anybody...
Across the board, yeah. But just the wider community.
Yeah.
What we've learned from studies and from time and from experiences is that those that aren't directly, they're at a different stage of their recovery.
They're at a different stage, yeah, completely. They're at a different stage of their recovery. They may not have been impacted in the same way through the loss of life as the families were, or losing a family member. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, and this is an interesting fact, is that what happens is, as people move away from in time from the event, people get back to normal life and living. So if we go back to the whole thing about the site and what should happen with the site, if we just talk about that, I can understand, you know, completely, and I think everybody would agree with this, Chrysler does need a shop. It's a very important part of any community. That shop was the heart and soul of that community. However, I suppose, you know, as time moves on, people get back to life and living. So what's happening at the moment is, with the proposed use of the site as a shop, people directly impacted, like the families, are re-traumatised by even that thought. Now, something interesting about that, families maybe out that are not living directly in the area are better able to voice their opinion about that. People within the area, they're living in the community. They're unsure how to respond. They may well be re-traumatised. They may well not feel able to voice their opinion. And that's another ripple effect of trauma and the aftermath of trauma, in that then you have like public representatives who are not sure what to say, don't want to really say anything. So you get a sudden wave of silence. But the people that can be most forgotten this is the people who were traumatised directly in this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their families again. So I suppose for me, I think it's a very important thing to consider here for everybody, and you know, out there that's listening. It's important to think, where am I connected into this, and where do I fall into that? Am I being silenced? Do I need to have a voice, or you know, am I one of the people who can freely speak?
I mean, ultimately, I'm not saying you're saying this, but it sounds like this. But ultimately, then really, this is a decision that primarily should be made by those obviously maybe looking to redevelop this site and those most directly affected by the traumatic events.
Yeah, completely.
Because if in the absence of that, we're not fully considering their emotional well-being.
Well, we're not considering the recovery process. We're not considering the loss, you know, of 10 people's lives. We're like erasing it. Now, on another point here, I think as well, Greg, is that we do know the shop needs to be put somewhere. But just imagine you put it right on the site. What will it be like for everyday people in that community going back into that shop on a daily basis? I mean, that's something that hasn't really been considered here. Because, you know, I mean, I wasn't there during the event. You know, I was there in the aftermath of the event. But every time I pass up and down that road, every time, you know, you're coming towards Chrysler, the first thing you think about is that shop and that day.
But for some...
So to stop there and go in would be a major challenge for local people.
Okay, but Liam, is it not possible too, just to obviously try and tease it out, that for some... that the way they can move forward is if, you know, they see life returning to there. And that, for instance, a memorial just might be an eternal reminder, which is a positive for some, but for some might be negative. Do you know what I mean? So how do you, I mean, I'm sure there are people that must feel that, right? So how do we balance then, how do we balance what the right thing to do is?
Yeah, well, that's the big question that's at stake at the moment, really. And I think coming back to the trauma and the effect of trauma, you know, part of the healing process is having that site preserved for everybody, not just for the immediate families, for everybody. Because, you know, something very tragic happened there. If we move across to, excuse me, if we move across to Northern Ireland, and we just look at, you know, driving through Northern Ireland, how many, you know, different memorials or monuments are erected in different places. They're all to mark historic events of tragedy. So I suppose research would show us and tell us that, you know, when something like a tragedy like of this magnitude happens, it's important to preserve that site for not for just the family or the families, for everybody in the community.
Like Hugh Harper made a comment that he can identify literally this position on the ground where his daughter took her last breath.
Absolutely.
Which could be, and I don't mean this in any way insensitive, but theoretically could be where the Monster Energy drink is, store is, you know, the display. I'm not saying that's going to be the case, and it actually sounds like I'm being harsh in my language, but I'm not. I'm trying to put myself in the mind of someone who lost someone directly by it. Mm. That would be very hard. It's very hard to sort of go, come on, pull yourself together, move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, completely.
When someone can literally quite, to the millimeter, identify
the final
resting place, but where
the loss of life happened.
The young girl drew her last breath.
Yeah. No, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. And if you were talking with more of the families, they will be able to know exactly, you know, the location on that site where their loved one drew their last breath. You know, and, you know, what Hugh Harper said wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Because I think when you lose somebody, you want to know exactly the point. You will make it your business to find the point. And that point is very important for you because that's, you have a connection with that. Mm. So, you know, you have a connection with that. And that's where I suppose this question arises now as to how do we decide? And I suppose what really, I suppose the purpose of, I suppose this conversation really is this is a major, major piece here for people to be considering. Like in making any decision around a shop is needed. Everybody accepts that. You know, that shop was the hub of the community, but even if it was built to the, you know, to a better spec than what it was, it will now not be the hub of the community in that location.
Do you think?
Yeah, I know from 20 odd years of experience of working with trauma.
You timelined it a little earlier on, and sometimes you have to pinch yourself a year and a half.
Mm.
It's would this be a different conversation if it was 2.5 years, 3.5 years?
No.
So the timing's irrelevant, irrelevant, or less relevant than one might think.
Yeah, no. The time people heal, but you know the healing process is dependent largely on what happens here going forward. The re-traumatization is what we don't want to happen here.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, the site will 20, 30, 40 years be a very important part of our history, our grieving process, you know, our way of managing our traumas. You know, I think that's the most important piece. And I think that's the bit that I think that can get overlooked.
And even just to... You know, another thing too is what we do. It's ingrained in us almost. Is at the time of anniversaries or a birthday to go back to where, you know. And again, I've tried to approach this from as an outsider, as sensitive and everything as possible. But I can imagine, like, what do you do on the anniversary of this? You know, if this is a hustling and bustling site.
Absolutely. You know, and I think the bit that's important...
They can't coexist, can they? A commercial premises and a memorial, it's one or other.
No. Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying which it should be, but they can't coexist because how could you go to... How could you go to grieve in that environment either?
Well, I mean, I think the site itself is a place where... You know, you can't have a shop on it. You know, it can't coexist as a memorial and a shop or a business, because your business is hustle bustle, and you know, people come and going.
One's quiet and reflective.
Yeah, that's exactly it. One's quiet. One's to sit and to meditate there with, you know, your memory. Now, people might also say out there, well, I mean, everybody's got their loved one buried. But the point that's important is that they didn't die in the graveyard.
No, and we heard
they died on that site.
And we heard from Bernie last week as well, that the grave's important, but a memorial to her husband is really where the
completely
the connection. I think I asked that, and she says the connection.
Mm.
Okay, I mean, that's clear in what your professional opinion is, and this is a professional opinion, by the way, Liam. You've come in here as a professional counsellor and psychotherapist. We're talking about trauma, and we're talking about the traumatic effect or the re-traumatisation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the approach you're coming from this. If you were asked, you know, in your opinion, which you were, but if you were asked formally, what's the implications of this for people? That's your answer, effectively.
Mm.
So what, just two last questions then. What can we do to recover from trauma? I mean, obviously, you know, speaking to a professional is helpful, but it's about tooling us up to deal with it on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the first thing we need to be considering here, you know, in recovery is not re-traumatizing. And then... You know, the second thing then is, you know, any type of body work. So counselling and psychotherapy is talking therapy. But, you know, psychotherapy actually focuses on the body and the impact on the body. But then other things can help as well, like very simple things like reflexology. Reflexology is a very powerful tool because it works directly with the body. And a reflexologist, a good reflexologist, can pinpoint exactly in the body where there's tension or trauma and work on it, you know, indirectly. So those type of interventions are really important for people, you know, at the moment in the recovery. But there's not one answer to that. There's numerous different things that people can do. But I think, you know, just for people out there, there's an awful lot of information on online on trauma, but you know, to really get to understand trauma, if you actually have an interest, there's a guy on just a lot of YouTube stuff. He's Dr. Gabor Maté, and he's one of the world's leading experts on trauma, and he can really he can really explain it in detail, and the importance of not re-traumatising people.
Okay, so we'll get his name actually off you because people will ring in.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, just to sort of recap here, is if this site was redeveloped and someone was re-traumatised by that and came to you as a psychotherapist for healing, it would be very hard for you to... it'd be very hard for you to make them feel any better about that. Is that the right way? You get where I'm trying to phrase it?
Well, you've got layer.
You'd be sort of trying to ask them to cope with that which would be difficult, I'd imagine, even with some of the skill set that you have.
Yeah, well, you know, you've got another layer of trauma.
They would have to accept.
Well, they're forced.
They're
forced. They're forced to accept.
Okay.
I think, you know, I mean, again, it's for the people of Graceland and the people impacted directly by this, the families. I think, you know, that there's talk about, you know, a community centre or some sort of centre being built. You know, that might be the location for that, along with the memorial garden. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, it serves the community better because I do think, and as I said earlier, I think that, you know, people who are not directly impacted but live in the area and experience the trauma from, as I said, the ripple effects, will find it very difficult to get into that shop.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
Liam Canning, counsellor, psychotherapist at New Dawn Counselling. Presumably people can search New Dawn Counselling and
they can, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, all right. Listen, thanks for your time, Liam. I do Thank appreciate you, Greg. It. We'll be back with more after these.
Thanks.
Some absolute clarity on motor insurance and the validity of it if you've modified your car. So we checked out with Chill Insurance. They're a big broker. If you're planning on insuring or modifying a car or are about to modify your current vehicle in any way, then you need to tell your insurer straight away. If any modifications have been made to your car, either by you or a previous owner, then this will impact on the cost of your cover. The insurer may request proof that the modifications were carried out professionally and that they were subsequently tested and don't impact the safe use of the vehicle. The cost of the modifications will also need to be disclosed so that this can be considered as part of any replacement repair in the event of an accident or theft. If you fail to notify your insurer of any modifications to your vehicle when taking out cover, then this will be an issue if you need to make a claim. If your insurer finds that you failed to disclose information about your modified car after investigating a claim, they may not reimburse you for your claim, or in some cases, the insurer may deny the whole claim or indeed cancel the policy. So also then we had someone working from the insurance company who contacted us to clarify a couple of things as well. They can't come on air at the moment because they're working. Non-disclosure of modifications to a vehicle that affects bodywork, power, that's the brake horsepower, you know, if you get it, you can get it mapped, or if it affects the weight of the car or the ride height, will result in cover being null and void. That's someone who works in insurance. Now, tow bar being added is not normally seen as a modification, but other circumstances, like if the driver is a mechanic, may raise a chance of towing cars, which may exceed the towing limit of the main car. This risk increase may be what the insurer wishes to avoid. On the camper van issue, the camper van policy do not have a no claims bonus, but when you open a policy, you must prove you are claims free. But 99% of these policies are cases when the driver keeps their car policy for daily use, as a camper is a recreational vehicle, thus less than daily use. This customer's insurance broker for van will be able to get an anticipated NCB scale so that driver can get a car policy again. So get on to your broker and they should be able to prove your driving experience through the camper van. So that's advice on insurance. Thank you for reading my comment. He has not notified his insurance company, just presumed by putting on a kit on his car it would be okay. All his friends are the same. I'd hate to think they are now driving around unwittingly insured. According to the people that we've spoken to that work within the insurance industry, unfortunately, if you've modified your car and you have not insured your insurance, you have not informed your insurance company, then I'll read it directly here. Non-disclosure of modifications to a vehicle that affects bodywork, power, your brake horsepower, weight or ride height will result in cover being null and void. Noel, smarty pants, I'm going to read it anyway. Hi, Greg, why did you get a tow bar? Surely Caroline is the one who needs a tow bar. She's been carrying you for years. Well, that's lovely, Oshin. Thanks very much indeed. But the problem is that it's primarily true. But I appreciate it anyway. Thanks very much. Someone said the quiet bit out loud, finally. Okay, coming up after 11 o'clock, we're talking to Maria Rush. Maria Rush, she is, of course, a very well-known business person, but also has a blog as well, Living Out Loud. And we're going to be talking about how we take a compliment. Are we good at taking compliments when they are given to us? We'll tease that out with Maria. That and so much more besides up in the next hour. We'll be giving you some advice and tips about how to perform well at a job interview. So it's going to be an interesting one. Back after these with the news.